Blog Talk Radio.
With in terms of success is step one is having a dream. A dream is something that you want to have, want to get accomplished. It's something that may be fuzzy in your mind. You get excited about it, but the whole point is that it's a dream, something that you want to have. The second step is that you've got to take that dream and turn it into a burning desire. The burning desire is something that you've got to have. It goes past wanting to have it, but now you've infused it in your spirit, in your system, that you say, hey, I got to have this. And again, remember now, you're focusing on this in different areas of your life in terms of having a dream, burning desire. The next step is having a goal. You've got to turn that burning desire into a goal. Now, in order to do that, you simply got to get very specific. The subconscious mind gets involved in when you set goals to help you reach the goal. The subconscious mind doesn't work on generalities. It focuses and deals best with very, very specific information. So in order to set a goal, you got to take the burning desire and get very specific about it. And then you've got to put a date on it. Get very specific, very focused, very clear, and put a date on it. Now you got a goal. Now let me give you an example. A person who might say that my burning desire is to get a car, that you can't turn that into a goal. You say, I got to have the car for various reasons. But to make it a goal, you got to say, what kind of a car? What year? What color? What make? What accessories does the car have? What does the interior look like? Is it leather? Is it cloth? Et cetera, et cetera. Does it have a CD in it? Does it have a cassette in it? You got to get very, very specific. The best thing to do in terms of your goal is to go literally get a picture of it and put that picture up somewhere that you can see it on a consistent basis, in the bathroom, in the bedroom, in your office, in your briefcase, in your purse. Put yourself in a position where you run to that goal, the specifics of it, and on an ongoing basis, it keeps it focused. It keeps it in your mind. The second thing that you've got to do is you've got to put a date on it. It's important. Every aspect of your life, take a look at sitting down and getting yourself a dream, a burning desire, a goal. Make sure that you've got those things covered.
Liberty from the angry mind. Liberty from the low life. Liberty from incivility. This is the Truth, Values, and Character Show.
And greetings. Welcome to another edition of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress T, and also known as Dr. Filet, and it is always wonderful to be here with you, live and in living color. Well, we are closing out our 2022 observance of Black Music Month, and we started off with a classic when it comes to the gospel music genre. You know, that is very, very unique for us as a people. No one sings what is known as the gospel like Black folks. Nobody, you know. That's one area they haven't seen been able to you know, do the culture bandit thing on. I'm sure they'll try at some point, but so far there's been absolutely no one that has been able to go into that arena and do any kind of even close kinds of things. So, you know, we started off with that, but also for another reason, because every month now we are going to pay tribute to ancestors. And last week, of course, I believe we paid tribute to Steve Coakley and Dr. Ed Robinson and a few others. Well, this week we're going to do tributes to and salutes to the great Catherine Dunham. We call her Saint Catherine Dunham because she's one of our sister saints. We have 25 sister saints, and starting in October, we will begin the process of installing them. And I'll tell you more about that shortly. Along with installing them, we are preparing to set up scholarship funds, for lack of a better word. We're going to change that wording because, you know, we don't want to do the same kind of stuff that other people have done. But with our 25 sister saints, how that's going to work is it'll be designed for women, young girls, women that are striving to do the work, the kinds of work that our 25 sister saints were doing, either the specific kinds of work or the contribution that they made or what have you. For example, Queen Mother Moore, well, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff with that, needless to say, and certainly when it comes to human rights, reparations. But she also, of course, fought for housing, fair housing for our people. She also fought on the international level when it came to the injustices for our people. So, again, we're going to break that down for you at this year's 25-year anniversary commemoration. There will be a Million Black Women Rising convention. I'll tell you more about that later as well. But this is where we'll present a very clear kind of structure and information that is going to bring the Million Women March and its universal movements forward. So again, with the 25 Sister Saints, you will see specific modes of operations that's just for them, okay? So we'll tell you more about that shortly as well. Again, tonight we're going to pay tribute to the great ancestor, Ken Bridges. That is who you heard when we opened up, Ken Bridges. We're not going to let people forget Mata, and definitely not let people forget Ken Bridges. And we have to say that his work and, of course, others have inspired us. And so when we introduce the Black Print Agenda 25, certainly it will, you know, kind of give you some insight into some of what has already been done, but also how we have, you know, taken some of that and have brought it forward. So again, look forward to the Black Print Agenda 25 Direct Action Program. We call it the P3 or Pi 3, and again we'll break that down for you a little later on as well. But again, Ken Bridges was the co-founder of the Mata Network, and so we have to now look and ask ourselves, what are we doing or not doing that we need to be doing? So we're going to talk more about that as we get closer to August, which, of course, is going to be National Black Business Month, but MWM is transforming it into National Self-Determination and Black Business Month. And that'll be for August, and there will be some major things going on there. For those who haven't gotten the information on, we have now partnered with the National Black Unity News. And so right now there is a special going on for that. You can place your ad in the Black Unity News for $25. And note, that newspaper is a real newspaper, y'all. It's not a newsletter. It's a newspaper. You can see it online. And you know, we've been sending out to folks, but you can get it online. But it's also a physical in-hand paper. So again, and it is distributed in Philly, in D.C., and in Baltimore presently in terms of hard copy. We'll be taking some copies up also to New York for the African Street Festival in New York, okay? But it's definitely available online. The next issue is coming out for July, and there's a special for those who want to support Million Woman March. We're asking just for $25 for your business card or a photo of, you know, your artwork or, you know, what have you, okay? So I'll give you some more information about that shortly as well. Okay, the other person that we're going to pay tribute to tonight is none other than our ancestor, Baba Kwame Ture. He, too, was born in the month of June. And so so was, again, Ken Bridges. He was born in the month of June. In fact, his Earth Day was yesterday, the 24th. And then, again, we're going to talk about Catherine Dunham, which was June 22nd. So, you know, again, we always want to make sure we mention and highlight our ancestors. I'll give you some brief history on them as we proceed tonight for the program. But again, you know, we have to do some things now that we know is going to be in the best interest. When we examine how, why are we not making the kind of progress that we need to make? Well, one of the answers that I've gotten through different processes is, to what degree are we really paying tribute to our ancestors? And not just ceremonially, not just in terms of the conversation of how great they were, but in terms of examining the work and then extracting or taking from that and developing what you need to do in that regard, be it personally, be it from an organizational standpoint, be it from a family standpoint. How much of our ancestors' work are we continuing? We talk about Malcolm X, we talk about Dr. Khaled, we talk about Queen Mother Moore, we talk about, you know, numerous people. We talk about their books, their lectures, but what actual work do we look at doing or are we doing that represents what they did, what they taught, what they were about, etc.? So these are some of the questions that we're now kind of bringing to the forefront, because we have to do better, and there has to be some greater accountability. And so MWM and others is now being positioned to do that. Moving right along, we have a lot of stuff we're going to cover tonight, and very shortly we are going to talk with sisters. Sister Pam Africa will be joining us shortly. There's something coming up for Mumia Abu-Jamal on the 29th. There is a court hearing that's going to be taking place. Now, we don't anticipate anything much happening with that, you know, the games that they play. But, you know, unfortunately, we have to go through some of these processes. And so on June the 29th, there will be another court something in regards to Mumia getting a new trial. So, you know, we'll see what's happening with that. But also on July the 3rd, there's something major happening. That will mark the actual day that Mumia was sentenced 40 years ago, roughly. And so we will, you know, get information from Sister Pam about that, what's going to be coming up on July 3rd. Let's see. The other thing we're going to talk about is, oh, and COBRA this weekend is having their national conference. And so we're going to get a report from Sister Anita Bell on some of what's going on with that. Now, again, you know, I know there's some who do not agree with COBRA's work, but what I've learned from experience and from analyzation is we've got to be really, really careful, because even though some feel, well, maybe, you know, COBRA hasn't made the kind of headway or whatever that it should have, this is what I say. Most folks wouldn't even be talking about reparations if it wasn't for COBRA. All right. I mean, that's just the truth of the matter. You know I heard about it by way of Queen Mother Moore / COBRA. And so while I've never wanted to actually, you know, get so involved in it per se, directly, I always made sure that I created a platform or other kinds of ways that the information could be generated and circulated. And I think we've got to be a little careful about, you know, what we do and how we do when it comes to our analysis with certain kinds of, you know, activities, campaigns, and so forth. There's a whole bunch of stuff that I don't agree with. Some of it is like rightfully on point, needless to say, because it's sellout nonsense. But some stuff is just a matter of, it's just not my technique. That's not my technique, or it's not how I would proceed in doing things. But at the same time, you know, I have to see the value. If there is some value in it, I will, you know, try to find the value. And so, you know, again, it's a matter of attempting to strive more myopically, for lack of a better terminology, trying to balance this stuff out. We've got to do better. That's, you know, the message that I've been getting. We've got to do better. And so we shall. Okay, moving right along, I'm going to play a couple of excerpts from Dr. Ed Robinson. Now, here in Philadelphia, we asked a question last week, I think it was, as to why there's little to no mobility in trying to establish some things that's independent for our children. Why do we keep sending our children to these people, knowing what the curriculum is? Well, unfortunately, we don't have any schools, so we got to send them somewhere, and most people have to work or, you know, whatever, so you can't keep them home. So, you know, it's a catch-22. However, we can struggle at least to get some adequate in some of these schools. So the question has to be, why is that not happening? Well, some of us know the answer. But we have to now begin to ask that question to a greater extent, and so we shall. However, I want you to hear Dr. Ed Robinson. Hold on one moment. Let me cast that out. I want you to hear Dr. Ed Robinson, and again, this is a black man who was a Pan-Africanist, by the way. He headed up a group called the Pan-Africanist Federation, right? And, you know, he created a curriculum, okay? So I want you to check him out for a minute. Hold on. Let me cue this up for you. Okay, and this is one that most probably have not heard of if you're not in Philly. But, again, he created an entire curriculum, right? Check this out.
The person, the group, is the greater the probability of genius within that group. So they tested the orangutan, these 15 geneticists from around the world. Now, these geneticists came from 9 different universities. And we have here on the cover of the pamphlet they put out the names of these geneticists. And you can see them right there, right beneath the title of this pamphlet. Now, this pamphlet, most people have no idea what it means. But breaking it down, and after you study it and have it explained to you by a geneticist, a trained geneticist, you will find that they're talking about DNA theories. Now, here are the names of these 15 geneticists from around the world, University of Japan, University of China. Yale University is the headquarters of this organization called the American Association for the Advancement of Science. And you see it down there. Now, this was copyrighted in 1996. All right. What it said is this, and this is the mind-blowing part. It said that when they tested the orangutan, they found out he only had 3 DNA series. They tested the gorilla. They found out the gorilla has 4 DNA series, but he's a little smarter than the orangutan. They tested the chimpanzee, which is an ape, and found that he had 5 DNA series. Then they went all into the different races of the world. They went into Europe and tested the DNA series of the English, the French, the German, the Spanish, the Russians, and found they had 6 DNA series. Then they put all of this, what they found from around the world, on a map. And this map really is called the intelligence map of the world, because they tested 116 different human groups and found their DNA series number. All of them, all over the world, have 6. And they put the numbers in form of a little flag that you can see on this map. These little flags have a color. And they show, this is upside down. I'm sorry. Yeah. And they show that the English have only 6, and it's all into Europe, only 6. Went over into Japan and China, they only have 6. Over into America, with the predominantly European, and they only have 6. Then they came into Africa, and they came to the part of Africa. Now, all the rest of them, they, in little flag colors, those flag colors are orange-red, if you notice. But when you came to Africa, found out that the African people have 9 DNA series. From here, just below the Songhai Empire, down to the foot of Africa. All those 10 nations, of which African Americans descended from one of them, 9 DNA series. The greatest possibility of genius in our group. Now, it's answered this age-old question. How can a people survive being told they're nothing for 400 years, never allowed to learn that they came from beautiful cities, and told they came from a jungle? How could a people survive? How can a people become champions in everything they touch? Because they have 9 DNA series, while the rest of the world has only 6. This is
indeed, that was Dr. Ed Robinson. And so, again, the question has to be asked, and we are. And family, we're going to give you the opportunity to chime in. Sister Pam will be joining us shortly. But in the meantime, we give you the opportunity to chime in. And that is, why are we not doing what it is we know we need to do when we have a lot of what we need, at least, you know, some stuff, meaning you just heard what this elder or now ancestor said about, you know, some of the research and information that he was able to obtain. And certainly there are others that have done that as well. So some of us have that information. Why have we not, and I'm not saying us per se, I'm just saying as a people, why has there not been more of an effort for us to have our own? So I'm going to come to you all with some, you know, answers to this, some responses to this. Why do you think this is happening? Realistically, I mean, and don't. I mean, we already know the system of white supremacy. We got that part, right? But you heard what Dr. Ed Robinson just said. We have been identified by not just us, but other people too, those that tell the truth, with having a high level of intelligence. Now, I dare say, something is not adding up here. We know this. We know that we're the original people. We know these other things, but yet we're not educating our children, at least most folk aren't. And the ones that do have the capability are not really striving to put certain things in place for us as a people. Why is that? So, again, I'm going to open up the phone lines for you all, or the talk line, or whatever you want to call it, and ask, what are your thoughts, family? What do you think? Why are we not, for the most part, and I mean, there's a few here and a few there, but come on, y'all. The conscious community, the political community, the progressive community of Black folks, the you name it, what's the mode of operations for us that we're looking at that we can identify that's really working on educating our children? And I mean, that's just a start. That's just a start. So please press 1 now if you have a response to that, because we've got to start speaking some truth to power, truly. Okay, while we're waiting for someone to press 1, maybe we'll hear a little more from Dr. Ed Robinson. Again, this is embarrassing, y'all. Really is. But we'll come back to that later.
And the other side of this, now this map is taken, I took this map right from this page here. And I blew it up so that the world could see it. Even though this is copyrighted, I can't let you have this book because it's copyrighted. The title of the book is called Global Patterns of Linkage, Disequilibrium at the CD4 Locus and Modern Human Origins. Global Patterns of Linkage, Disequilibrium at the CD4 Locus and Modern Human Origins. Now, you have to be a geneticist to even know what they're talking about. But when we broke it down and interviewed Dr. Kidd, the head, he's the chairman at Yale University. He broke it down into plain everyday English so that the world would know that the African American is descended from those people who gave to the world the Great Pyramid, gave to the world science, gave to the world mathematics. A black man named Ahmose gave algebra to the world 3,700 years ago. It's in the world book. It's in the encyclopedia. They don't want our children to know this because then that would make the playing field level for white children. And you know what happened when they made the playing field level in basketball and allowed black men to play. Out of 29 of the top seeded players in the world today, 28 are African American. When they opened up the 10 relays, when they opened up the Olympics and allowed blacks to run back in 1932, we've won all the gold medals. And the same thing will happen in the classroom when they allow our children to learn their African history. That's what this is saying.
Dr. Robinson,
mm-hmm.
Are you saying that the African American also had 9 strands of DNA?
I am saying that we are descended from the West Africans who have 9 DNA sequences. On this map, that these geneticists, you see the green? You see the green, Danny?
Yeah.
Well, that's where we're from. That's where African Americans are from.
Did they test African Americans?
They tested Americans as a group, whites. And they have 6. They didn't test African Americans because they know that we are the same people from West Africa.
So they didn't have to.
Didn't have to.
Okay, that's true.
That's true. Yeah.
How is it that you think that this evolved, that we evolved with nine strands?
Nine.
Below the Sahara.
Well, it tells you in here. This book tells why. Preemie babies, you're leaving the mother's womb early, too early, never develop to the same.
All right. Again, that was Dr. Ed Robinson. And again, if you're not from Philly, you probably never heard of him. But this just shows you that all over, particularly the U.S., I'm going to focus on the U.S., we have brilliant minds that know these things. I mean, of course, we know of some of the great scholars that many make reference to, you know, the great Amos, Dr. Amos Wilson, Dr. Francis Preswell, Dr. Richard King, and others. But certainly there are many Black folks that have really done a lot of work. We've got to do better, family. We've got to do better. So, again, I'm going to go back to you all and ask your thought, your opinion. You know, what are your thoughts as to why we're not doing what we obviously should be doing, and what do we need to do now to step it up? How do we, as Dr. Robinson just said, change the game to a greater extent? The game is always changing, needless to say. But how do we change the game for us, by us, with us? And here we are in 2022. Y'all can't even name five independent schools. Five. I challenge you. Name five independent schools. Don't look it up online. That you know of. Throughout the U.S. I mean, this is ridiculous. So we're going to go to the phone line and get some opinions from you all, and then Sister Pam should be joining us shortly. So let's go to caller at 7628. 7628, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment, A New Day.
Jumbo, Baba Yao, Washington,
D.C. Hey, Baba Yao. Yes, how you been?
Okay. Now, I believe the oldest African independent school is in Washington, D.C., called Ujamaa Shule.
Uh-huh.
And the people, the brother that runs it, is Baba Zulu. Now, he don't let no white people in the building. The Europeans in the building, white people, have been there 50-something years. Don't let them in. Now, one of the things I think we do, we don't trust each other because we're so attached to the white in America as far as standards, who could teach. So most of the people that probably come in trust what Baba Zulu is doing. And then what can happen, how stuff kind of can fall apart, that's why they don't let nobody in, is that people seriously. Because the teachers might be teachers that the persons he liked or persons that's qualified, but they say they might not have a BA or probably have it. But most of them might come from student Howard students or parents that come to say that I can teach, and he have a curriculum, and he don't let the European in. Mm-hmm. So other places is tied into the European standard, what's the teacher's salary, what's the standard, and this and that. Because we tied into the bigger system. But he's not tied into the bigger system. He's not tied into the bigger system. He decided that this is what I'm going to do. And then the students, and then we think we think that you got to have all these certain standards tied to the American system. But the students usually graduate at 15, 16 years old and go into college because they take the college assessment test and they get in. So all the bigger questions people think is got to be answered to get in. It ain't that. The students take the test and they get in. So you don't need all the other how many credits you need, or you might need them. But he said, well, this is what the students had done. And ain't nobody really trailing him because he ain't got nobody checking his records. So
the question that I'm really trying to get to is, and you just said something that's very important, and that is the fact that that school has been in existence for at least 40 years. So my question is, right, well, for several years. So my question is, here we are in 2022. We have more folk that are so-called woke that do have, you know, degrees, some masters, some even PhDs. Why would we not have the energy, the tenacity, or whatever you want to call it, to have our own schools? Because again, you name one, and what I said to folks is, you can't name. Here we are, all over the country. We've got doctorate degrees, master's degrees, people that just have plain old skills, experience, etc. So the question is, why do you think, you answered it to some degree, Baba, by saying we don't trust each other. But I'm saying the people who supposedly are striving for self-determination and other mindsets, you're saying that they trust the white man more than they do us? Or someone that would be within our circles?
Yeah, as it connects to our standard of living, what it might cause or what they might need, and they might not want to do the extra work to assist, because they might have one job, but they don't trust to come back to assist the independent school. They're not trying to do, they don't want to do the extra work. See, once you get tied into the standard of living that America dictates, you saying that school ain't got this, that school ain't got this. We ain't really do the work because the parents and stuff usually clean the school and all that. So I think it goes back to trust and know. And we know that the system works because most of the kids graduate from college 3 or 4 years. But I don't know why they don't do it.
Okay, well, that's the question that we want to get to, and I'm going to get some answers, and I'm glad you gave, you know, your thoughts on it as well. We're going to go to a few more callers shortly and see what their answer is, but I'm going to give some of the answers that I've been able to observe, because it's a little more to it than that, and we need to start explaining it and exposing it. Why, as a people, do we not have independent institutions in our communities? And I'm talking about folks who have read Dr. Wilson, read Dr. Ben, read Dr. Clark, went to the lectures, listened to the DVDs, etc. Something has got to be said and done in that regard. Either it's hypocrisy, stupidity, or some other stuff. So we're going to get down with it. So thank you, Baba. But stay right there. I need to bring in our sister, Pam Africa. So stay right there, Baba. And we're going to come back to that. But she's waiting in queue, so I want to get her in. Give me a minute. So, Baba, I'm going to come back to you in a few, okay?
Hey.
Hey, gotcha.
Hold on a minute. Let me get some sleep here. Whew, what a day.
right, family. So we got Sister Pam Africa.
Oh, we're on the air.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. This is a day. Oh. Let me sit down a minute. I just ran in. Okay. Keep my ear
all
off
right.
the
you
phone.
You want me to give you a few minutes? Because I can. I see that Mumia did a new commentary that just came out. So if you need a few minutes to just, I can give you a couple of extra minutes if you need it.
Okay. You want to play that?
Yep.
The commentary. You know
yep.
about the new book too, right?
No, but wait,
yeah.
Catch your breath for a minute, and I'm going to play the new commentary. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, family, let's give our sister a few minutes because she's just getting in, and this is the latest Wumi Abu-Jamal commentary just came out on 6/24. So, hey, I love it. So check this out. Give me a minute. I got to cue it up for you. All right, here we go.
Sommes et fermes, sans notre action. Ici est mon petit-fils, au nom donné le nom Jamal, par son père. Nous sommes très contents avec les nouvelles des miracles de moi dans Paris. Notre famille, mon frère, mon fils Jamal, et maintenant mon petit-fils. Je m'en plus jeune. Ils viendront à Paris autrefois. 2, 1, 1. Nos amis aussi. Mes amis de Paris, merci pour les honneurs des miracles là. C'est Mumia Abu Jamal. Merci mes amis.
Okay, well, I wasn't quite ready for that, Pam. I didn't know it was going to all be in French.
Yeah.
Okay, I was waiting for him to translate, but that didn't happen. Uh-huh. So
well, you know, you have
I'm
to push
sure...
that translate button. Hello?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right, family. Y'all got to bear with me. I'll do that the next time. But anyway, that was the latest Wumi Abu-Jamal commentary. I recognized a few words up in there because my French is definitely gone after these years. But anyway, we do have Sister Pam Africa with us. And Pam, you mentioned that Mumi has a new book.
Well, Todd Burroughs, and he did a book. On, remember when Mumi was dealing with the hepatitis C?
Yes.
And we did this Zoom. So what he did was to put a lot of the information of each speaker, you know, in there.
Uh-huh.
And he also, you know, I haven't read the book. He just sent it to me.
Uh-huh.
I'm in it. And I found out that I was in it. And because what he did, he the information from the Zoom that we had on Mumia was such a good one that he decided to turn the Zoom into a book. And then, you know, he did a few other, you know, added a few other things, you know, in it. You know, his way
mm-hmm.
of bringing attention to what was going on and the medical neglect that is going on inside, you know, the prisons. And, you know, things are not getting better. They're getting worse inside these prisons. And, Dr. Matula, and you know, he's very, very ill. He's you know, somebody said he's not in hospice. Another person said that he was, and also
yes.
I don't know. I do know that his condition
yes.
isn't far from that. You know, it's hadn't you know done that as of yet. And Mumia has a court date coming up Wednesday the 29th. And, you know, it's always been, you know, our contention. We don't care what it is. And because what's happening, the lawyers and the lawyer and the DA is coming in because the last time we went to court when they supposed to be making a decision on whether Mumia, you know, will go through or not. they came up with, you know, they found some more evidence. The DA asked for an extended 60 days, or it might have been 90 days. And so he's supposed to present, you know, what it is that he's saying. But I know Mumia's attorneys is going to ask for another 60 days. And some people are saying, well, you know, it's really not that important because it's going to be an in there and out there. We never trust this government. And it has been said before, and we went to court anyway, that, oh, it's not going to be, you know, no big deal. Well, it was a big deal. It was, you know, it was what they said, and then they went ahead and did stuff. But luckily, and because we know these monsters, we were there. And that's the position that we're taking on Wednesday. And that the importance of, you know, like being there to witness what it is that they're doing. Because Mumia, a while ago, when Judge Tucker, a black judge, and all granted Mumia the right to an appeal, and it was some strategy that his attorneys was using, and where they appealed Tucker's appeal, you know, they appealed it, and we wound it up in court for a very, very long time, and which in between that time, it's sort of hard to try to explain in a few. But we had won. We had actually won that, even to the point that when Judge Tucker granted Mumia the appeal, and Daniel Faulkner's widow, who is now remarried, and her name is Miss Pokovich, and when she came out the courtroom, yeah, that's her name, Pokovich. Wait a minute. It's Poker with a V, Pokovich. Not, you know, I get that confused. It's so easy to do that, right? But when she came out the courtroom, she was so pissed while she was in the courtroom this day, and I was on the outside. They wound up putting her out the courtroom because when the judge was talking, she started, you know, screaming and howling, and, you know, and the judge asked her to be quiet. And or to sit down, or she would have to be, you know, taken out the courtroom, and she just kept on going on. And because they knew it was, oh, let me tell you, that last day in court, they brought every Hitler-spitting motherfucker that they had. They dug old racist-ass, you know, and they had 1 foot in the grave. They was coming there. They had the state troopers, the police, they had the sheriff department in there, and all, you know, in the hallway, and all, on the inside of the courtroom. We was like, you know, what's going on here? They knew that Judge Tucker was going to grant Mumia that appeal, and he was looking for trouble, and all, which we wasn't going to give him. So, you know, I warned people, you know, what was going on, and to the fact that, you know, I don't know exactly what was going to happen, but when you see these suckers come out like this, and something is getting ready to kick. And so whether it's in their favor, and you know, and whether it's in their favor and they're afraid that we're going to turn this motherfucker out, or whether it's in our favor and, you know, they want to turn it out, right? So, as it turned out, and Judge Tucker grant, and this was a fear tactic for the judge with all these, you know, monsters showing up. It was like the monsters ball, and with all of them sitting in the courtroom in wheelchairs and all kinds of crap, right? So, you know, all of a sudden, you know, Pokovic, and she comes out the door, and she's like looking, and you know, and she looked and she turned around and saw me. She said, "You bitch," and you know, and I had to throw my hand up to let people know, don't react to this, and because this was a setup, because it was cops in front of her, cops behind her, and she showed her anger because we had won, and how, you know, how else, you know, I know that we had won, and was when they had a press conference. They took one up to the FOP's headquarters, which is in the greater Northeast now, and she was interviewed, and in that interview, she was saying, we lost this, we lost this. And then you had the DAs, and you had some lawyers and some cops was telling her, don't worry about it. And, or, you know, they was going to deal with it. They had a strategy that they was going to come up with and all, you know. And we, like, glorifying in the fact that, you know, the pill, you know, is coming down. What they did, they went and pulled out this thing called the King's Bench Act. And, which held everything up, which what happened, they wound up saying that Krasner was in favor of Mumia. And, so they had this hearing, and on which when they filed the King's Bench Act, the state judges turned it down, and I think there's another court that turned it down, and they wound it up, I think, in Supreme Court, Superior Court, and they upheld it. And I'm saying the reason why the two times before, they went judge shopping, like Trump do, go judge shopping until he got someone that was foolish enough to go ahead and do what it is that, you know, they didn't for him, which held the case up 6 months. And the only person in that that was involved in the King Bench hearings was the DA, which was Krasner. He was under their influence for 6 months. None of Mumia's lawyers was allowed to be in there or, you know, any spectators. It was him, the judge, which was, a judge for the FOP, and the DA, and, you know, all their people. And they held it up, like I said, you know, for 6 months. And then they came back, you know, with a decision that, you know, they could not grant, you know, this King Bench thing that they wanted, right? So we back to them with, you know, evidence. And, they wind up asking for the 60 days. And with this new evidence, when our lawyers see it, they're going to ask for, you know, another, I think they asked for 90 days, the DA. And then the other ones asked for 60 days. Is going to ask for 60 days. And, or they might say, well, no, they're going to have to look at the evidence. But people need to know what's going on there. People are constantly asking, what's going on, what's going on? It is our job, our duty to be in there at any time and let people know what's going on. So on the 29th, that's what we're going to do. When we come outside, and we want to have a press conference. Oh, and here's another point. You know, we're always outside in large numbers when Mumia go to court. What they're saying now is they passed a law that you cannot demonstrate in front of the criminal justice building or you can be arrested. So I'm letting you know what we're going to do. And we're going to have on four corners, and we're challenging that at the same time. And we're going to have people on four corners with the Mumia signs and people passing out information. We, when it comes to the criminal justice building, and we will be where parked cars at. We will not be on their grounds. But a hearing is over. We're going to call a press conference right where all the media always meet when they're dealing with a case, and that's at the middle door. And we're going to be at that middle door, and we're inviting the press to be there. They can come if they want because we bring our own press, and our thing is to get the information out to people. What's going on, and the significance of July 3rd. 40 years ago, on July 3rd, Mumia was sentenced to death. And how that went down on July 1st, Mumia did not have a chance to present his side of the trial because they put him out of the courtroom. And Mumia's attorney at that time, Anthony Jackson, didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to deal with the case, you know, at all. Yeah. So, to death, remember? And on July 1st, the judge told the jury, he says, that they can either find Mumia guilty or innocent, they can come back with a verdict, and remind them that this is the July 4th weekend, and if they want to go home for the July 4th weekend, they have to come up with some stuff, you know, right away. So that was on the first. And The second, they came up with guilty. The third, they came up with death penalty. The fourth, they all went home and party. But we ain't let it be no damn party in here, because every 4th of July, while they're trying to party and stuff, we're there. We're putting out information, letting people know what's going on. So this year will be no different, you know, with all their, you know, threats. And like I said, we will not be on their grounds, but our presence will be out there. And, you know, that's on July 3rd. And then, you know, the press, mm-hmm. I mean, June 29th. We don't have a courtroom, number yet, because they always give us that at the last minute. And but, okay. You know, we're asking people to come on in. And you know what? I'm going to take on the job of bringing, because, you know, this case has been 40 years. It's been 40 years, and since they sentenced Mumia. And there has been a lot that's going on. They damn near killed Mumia several times. And, but, you know, he keeps surviving. And, but the elder support that was there in the day, we need y'all to come back. We need you to come back and take on activities of helping us to get information out. We have the information, and but we need people to be consistent. I used to bring a group in how we got things changed in city council for Mumia and got that hepatitis C stuff. One of the activities was to be consistently at city council, be consistently at these people offices, and to give them evidence, because these people are in a conspiracy to commit cold-blooded, premeditated murder. And when this thing first happened, people was questioning, like, you know, well, he could be guilty. What about the gun? What about this? What about that? We every bit of that down, every bit of it down. The evidence that is presented here is the evidence of innocence. It's just like that punk Trump who want to say, we won the election, we won the election. They lost the damn trial, but they still saying, and they still trying to do one little dirty, filthy, underhanded deed after another. But time is, you know, running out. When Mumia got the hepatitis C, he wound up with cirrhosis of the liver. And the only way he can get better is to be from out of there, from out of there, so that he can be taken care of on the streets. The diet is messed up, and we're working on a lawsuit now, because anytime the doctors say that you're supposed to have certain food, and you know, for this cirrhosis of the liver, which they caused him to have, this cirrhosis of the liver. I'll go into that on another show, but it's really urgent that people, and let me say this, there's going to be, we got the trial, the hearing on the 29th, and we got July 3rd, which is a few days, you know, after that, and we're asking people, you know, to choose, you know, which one that you can, you know, get to. Some people's going away for the weekend, but you can be here for the hearing, if you can do both, that'd be good. And we have some, you know, people coming in on buses and things, you know, for July 3rd. And we got carloads of people coming in, you know, for the trial. Some of them will be at both, and some will be at one or the other. And we're also, since this is the 40th year since they sentenced him to death and exposing it, and Love Not Fear came up with the idea of doing 40 cities. For Mumia. So it's going to be 40 cities, you know, constantly putting out information. And what we're saying is that activity can be exactly what we're doing right now, letting people know what is going on. You know, I'm not as thorough as I want to be for the, you know, the lack of time. And, I've been doing one event, you know, right after another, and just getting in from one. And I don't want to have things really mixed up for people. But, you know, those two dates, July 29th at the Criminal Injustice Building, and, at 9, we'll be there waiting in order to find out what room, or we'll probably find out the room the day before, and to let people know. So the 29th at 9 o'clock, if you could, you know, be at City Hall, the criminal justice injustice building, and you know, do that. And July 3rd, and I don't have my paper. I believe it started at 11 at the Thomas Paine Plaza, you know, there. And because, you know, that week is going to be a whole lot of stuff going on in the city. And it's our opportunity and all to take the platform and to put out more information and keeping people informed and letting the people that's coming here for that Freedom Week, let you know, well, everybody here knows a lie, that these monsters here is in the process of killing an innocent black man. And, you know, all the people is in the uproar about what happened here, what happened there. Mumi is a victim of a shooting as well, but he survived. You know, dangerous guns in the hands of maniacs. You know, he was shot by one of them cops, like a lot of our people is shot by a cop. But, you know, I'm looking at this whole thing, and, you know, these people don't fall far from what, you know, what it is, you know, that they do. Trump and is trying his damnedest to fight to get into, become president, you know, again. And, you know, he's doing everything, and it's all crazy. And these people here are doing the exact same thing because they're trying to take an innocent, proven man and try to make him, you know, appear to be guilty. And all these years, haven't been able to do it. And every time we get to the point where you can feel the freedom and they come up with another illegal act. And just like, you know, the King Bench Act, that was an illegal move that they made. But people are acting like these motherfuckers did something. Oh, here I go. Like, you know, they done did something that, you know, is within law, like Trump. And, you know, nobody is above the law. They wrote that bull. And it was written for white folks. It wasn't written for us. Nobody is supposed to be above the law. Well, he is. He's breaking every damn thing. Same thing with the case of Mumia and all these cases throughout the United States. I'm fighting to free people from prison. And because the people that's in prison is there because of the crimes of America. And the majority of this stuff is economic war. And, you know, and when they find our youth and, you know, find them, you know, our people, you know, that's on drugs, those are drugs that they provided. And, you know, a lot of people right now is hooked on drugs because the damn doctor hooked them on it, you know, but they go to jail. And, you know, although it's the crime of this government greed, you know, so, you know, I fight to get them out and I fight. And I had a meeting tonight with some sisters from South Carolina, and Brother Ghani came in, you know, who was a juvenile lifer who got out. And I'm telling you, this brother came out running. And, you know, he has a program now where he, young folks to get in trouble. And before they goes to the police, it goes through this program that they set up. And, you know, where they hook them up with the victim, them in the victim talk, and, you know, explain, you know, what's happening. And it's, you know, deal to being worked out that these people, and all, because the thing is to correct the situation, to correct it. And, you know, you're not doing anything by just putting people in jail, and because what you're doing, you're just making them harder and become more, you know, more criminalized unless they be in jail with somebody like Matula Shakur, Sundiata Coley, Jamal, who these brothers said mentored them. There's one brother who came out of jail who's been with these people, and his name is Bobby Harris. And, you know, he got out on, I think the juvenile thing as well, too. Has his own water business, and he only hire felons. And he had, you know, he got trucks and things, you know, to help out. And, you know, and here what I just found out from Bobby tonight is his wife and him is running the business. They, you know, teach people what it is that they need to do to get their, what's that alphabetical number for driving the truck, CDL?
Right.
License. And, help them get tax, help them, you know, you know, just bring them in. They, in order to work for him, you have got to be a felon. This is how they mentor these brothers. These brothers and sisters that's coming out these prisons, they're coming out and are, you know, with, you know, a purpose in mind, and that is helping our people. But you know one thing? And, you know, a lot of people don't know, but Bobby Harris, Celine, and Brother Ghani, they all have programs in this. Another sister by the name of Cynthia, and she's Latino, and she come out fighting. I done met so many women and that are fighters. Here's another thing I want to remind people about. And the women, how much time we got, sister?
We got to get ready to wrap up because I see Sister Nita is in queue, so she's up next.
Okay.
So we just got to
Right. So I'm going to bring people up to date next time on what's happening with the houses where and I talked to them. They're going to be calling you. They said you told me to call you only when you need help. So they said at this point they need help. So they're going to be calling you, and they really appreciate all that help that you have given them, because they were given last year. And you know what, I'm very sorry because I'm going into the other sister's time, but you know, we need to you know, talk about what they're doing to our elderly and disabled. I'm still moving, going to continue to move, and talk to you soon.
All right, my sister, good thing. Love you.
Out to Brother Khalife. I love you too, Brother Khalife. On the move.
All right. All right, okay. Family. So that, yep, all right. That was Sister Pam Africa. And as you can tell, she's always on the move, always bringing and speaking truth to power. And that's what we're talking about here at New Day. You know, those who are ready to really step up and do some things. I mean, you know, we love events, we love festivals, we love conferences and all of that. Those are wonderful, wonderful things. But there's a day-to-day reality. The fact that we have no schools, as we talked about earlier, we have no health facilities for the most part. You know, in 2022, it is just unacceptable. And we have to begin to examine why. Why? With all of the doctorates, with all of the masters, with all of the bachelor's degrees and experienced people that we have from different fields, why don't we have these things in our community? We have to begin to ask these questions realistically. And unfortunately, for two decades now, I've been examining it here in Philadelphia, and now I'm really prepared to provide a report on what I've seen, and hope that others will begin to do so as well. Not to try to downgrade or anything like that, but to examine so that we know. Let me say this really clearly, so that we can move forward, because we already know, we've been known, and so to keep repeating the same stuff over and over and over and getting nowhere with it, as we've said before, that's a form of insanity. So the blockers, we're putting you on notice. We know who you are now. We can prove it, because all we have to do now is look and see the work that has been accomplished, et cetera, et cetera. At any rate, we have Sister Nita getting ready to come up now. We're going to get our report from Encobra. Encobra's conference is taking place this weekend. Sister Nita, I know you're there, but I need you to press 1, if you would, please, so that I can see you a little clearly, a little more in queue. And, okay, I see you now. Great. Okay, and as I said again, and I'll recap in case those who didn't catch the first part of the program. You know, again, there's a lot of issues with different groups now, with people and all of that. And that, you know, hey, that's life. What can we say? But again, it behooves us to recognize the plus stuff, the stuff that is factual. And again, Encobra definitely is one of the first entities in modern day to really push the envelope on about reparations. Just the word itself. I mean, folks, today, it seems like Juneteenth. I remember when the book here in Philly, Ron Brown, in 98, something like that, Nobody hardly was going to no Juneteenth, nothing, nothing. And then it grew, and it grew, and it grew. And we're going to bring him on in the near future to talk about what actually happened. Because, see, for Philly, here's what happens. If you do something in Philly and it gets big and other people, so-called the mover shakers or others, are, you know, can't get their hands on it, it creates a problem. They will character assassinate you or create some other drama, right? Then you have the ones who are just haters. Just haters who wish that they could have did it. Some of them think they should have did it, and so forth and so on. We're going to start breaking down the new Boule stuff along with the Willie Lynch stuff. Philly has – Philly's classic. Anyway, we're going to go to a live line, and we're going to talk to Sister Anita Bell, who is, in fact, the co-chair for Encobra Detroit. But again, we're going to focus also on the actual national, and she's going to give us, you know, some insight into what's been going on and some of the new leadership from what we're told. So let's do this. Let's open up her mic, and let's get this report. Hey, Sister Anita,
yes,
how you be?
I'm good. How about you? I'm so glad you all have a lot of energy at this time of night.
Well, you know, some of us, hey, listen, sis, some of us, you know, the only time we're not doing it is when we're sleeping.
Oh, no, no, no. I start winding down, and so I said, okay, y'all don't know she's dozing off. But,
well, we thank you. We appreciate you staying up. So thank you.
Oh, yeah. Because I enjoy hearing Pam Africa describe what is going on with Mumia and the various legal challenges and the actual goal being to kill him before the appeal is overturned. I hear all of that because everything she's describing is just classic legal obstructionism. But I don't want to go too much into that because then I'll go off topic from what I was tasked to discuss. So I was tasked to discuss the Encobra National Convention. And for those who are not familiar with that acronym, Encobra, it's the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America. And so that National Convention took place this weekend, and it was the 33rd National Convention. It was part virtual and part in person, so I call that it's called a hybrid model, and that's good so that you can have a lot of people attend who in a coming recession may not have the finances or maybe the health to get there.
So
virtual has that particular potential, and it also allows people to participate from other parts of the world if they care to pay the registration fee. If it's hard to pay in dollars when you're in America, it could be even harder to pay in dollars elsewhere, like in the diaspora and in the motherland. But that being said, at least if somebody was wealthy and decided they wanted to watch, they could. Then that could have been an easy thing for them to do with a virtual model. And also, there were people who were there in person, and. But also the board of directors meet for Encobra before the convention as one of their meetings. But this is pre-annual meeting, so that's very important. I used to be on the board, and that's a whole other story because when I ran for office, I had to resign from the board. I'm trying to remember where that is in the bylaws, but it may not be a bylaw. It may just be a good practice. So that if you are a candidate, you could, it didn't want to seem like a tacit endorsement because at that time I was the only presidential candidate who was a member of the board of directors for Encobra.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of them just signed up for HR 40. Anyway, so I'm going too fast. HR 40 is House Resolution 40 that was introduced initially by John Conyers in 1989, and that is reparations study bill that now has been, I want to call it modernized, to actually not just be a study, but also look at implementation strategies. So
that is the
current HR 40 that was rewritten in 2017, which happened to be the same year that John Conyers was forced out of Congress, and now the standard bearer for the same proposal, so the same proposal is Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee from Houston.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. So that is some of the history so that people catch up. What had happened that might be of particular interest is that last year in 2021, the MacArthur Foundation, the MacArthur Foundation gave NARC, which is the National African American Reparations Commission, gave NARC and NCOBRA a total of $3 million, split in half for each organization, unsolicited grant. And there were those of us, like somebody who's no longer on the board, who asked, what are the strings attached to an unsolicited grant?
Right.
Well, of course, at the same time, I was going through my own personal, not even personal, a battle with NCOBRA National related to things going on here in Michigan, and it actually exposed the hands of the Michigan Democratic Party trying to control NCOBRA Detroit by starting their own chapter. Yeah, and then boycotting everything that we did, and just do their own.
Right.
And that way, it aligns with their Democratic agenda. But when the Democrats, including Black Democrats, don't represent the interests of the people that they say they're representing, then if you're of another political party or independent or Republican, whatever, then now you are marginalized and treated as if you are a radical.
Right.
So, and that is what happened to me. And Empress had a chance to see that firsthand when they literally blackballed Reparations Awareness Day that was being financed by NCOBRA National, but all of the Black Democrats boycotted it, for lack of a better word.
And point of clarity, Sister Anita. Point of clarity. Point of clarity. We call it white ball.
Yes. What? The reason I use
we don't call it black ball no more. We call it white ball.
Yeah, right. I know, but quite honestly, when I say black ball, everybody who is a Mason understood what I just said.
Right.
And I like to use black ball because I keep saying they throw black balls at me, and I'm like, there's a bunch of castrated black men, and I'm not throwing it. I'm collecting them to put them back on them. That's why I call it black ball. But I'm going to give them back to them because I'm tired. I want to be the only soprano in the room if I'm the only woman in the room, okay?
I know that's right.
So that's why I'm collecting them and giving them back to them, but they keep throwing them at me, and I'm wondering, do they have to cut them off themselves or what? I have all kinds of questions for them. Anyway. Please, is this being recorded? Because I'm running for office. Don't use this against me. Anyway, so that's part of what happened here in the Detroit area, and I had concerns that meant that we were infiltrated and controlled by the Democratic Party. And
right.
I was concerned that was a new development because of new money. It may not be new. It may have been as old as the inception of the organization that this is kind of where we're going with Democratic control. But that control must be lessening to an extent that 1 month before the NCOBRA National Convention, the male co-chair, Cam Howard, resigned.
I know Brother Cam.
I know him. I like him, but I had concerns.
Right.
I had concerns about that money. And did that money come with strings? And who were those strings attached to? And are you now obligated and beholden and under their control, or are you still true to the mission? Because, Cam, I'm not, no doubt, before all of these influences, he was the one. He was
right.
He was a strong stalwart. He rewrote H.R. 40. He was, I hate to cuss, but he was a shit. So,
right.
So, I mean, head dog in charge. Yes, he did it. He did it. So,
right.
I understand. I didn't want that to change. I didn't want somebody to sway him away from that. So,
right.
So, I don't know what happened, but the board met and selected or elected Willard Lett to be the new male co-chair. And they did that 1 month before the national convention. And you can imagine how many people who were not on the board saying, quite honestly, what the hell happened? And nobody's telling us anything except that we need internal reparations and internal repair and internal healing. So the first
right.
part that was the first part of yesterday's virtual event focused on internal repair and internal repair and healing. Now, we went through psychological exercises, but we never face the elephant in the room. Nobody wants to confront it because, you know, all that brings stress and blah, blah. Anyway, so,
right.
So there's all these questions, and people who were in the virtual room, and you can hear the tension when they had the annual meeting. Now, let's go through the leadership again. So Cam Howard, who was the national male co-chair, resigned. He's from Chicago. He was replaced by Willard Lett, who is now the new national male co-chair, and he also was over the New England chapter of NCOBRA. So New England combined several of those extreme northeast, Maryland, Rhode Island, Connecticut, that kind of thing. So that gives you an idea of, I call it geography and placement. Now, prior to Cam resigning, Brenda Lett, who is Willard's wife, was the treasurer for NCOBRA National, and you know, therefore the report on that money would have come through her.
Right.
But because her husband is now the national male co-chair, she resigned as treasurer to avoid the appearance of conflict of interest.
Conflict, sure.
I understand that from a legal perspective, but can you imagine now at the national meeting, they didn't replace the treasurer. They just replaced the male co-chair, and we didn't have a treasurer's report on this $1.5 million. From this grant. Okay, I'm just saying, because of these, we don't know what caused Cam to resign. We don't know what caused Willard to be selected. But I do understand, even if it's not in the bylaws, before somebody goes to a lawyer and sue, that you can't have two national officers married to each other, especially when there's $1 million involved. So I get why she had to do that. But
right,
you can imagine the tension because we had to elect a treasurer, and we did, but everybody's like, well, what is going on? What's going on with the money? So what was normally going to happen, bylaws and tradition, was that the female co-chair was going to be elected during this particular national meeting.
Right.
And again, Brenda Lett could not run for that office, right?
Right.
So the two people running, Tima, and her last name is Perry or Peary, and then I forgot, oh God, that just shows what time of night it is. My brain is shutting down. But Fatima Perry from the South Louisiana area, she was running against Kenneth Henry. And Kenneth Henry is up in Washington, D.C. So it was an interesting election because you have part virtual where the people are vetted to be members and make sure that they can vote. And then the same vetting was supposed to have gone on in person at the convention. And theoretically it did. But you can imagine it in person attendance was relatively small, like 19, 20 people. And online was the bulk of people, but the ones who stayed for the election were just 26. So we have approximately 46 people or 45 people voting during the election. And there were all kinds of issues raised about is this proper, where is it in the bylaws about virtual meetings. And I'm sure a bylaw might need to be written about that. But yes, if you did not let the people virtually vote, whether there's a bylaw or not, but they paid their money to be there virtually, if you don't let them vote, you just let the people in the room vote, that was going to be a strong problem too. Because during a pandemic, this is why you have organization. When you have a bunch of lawyers in the room, and worse, not just lawyers, when you have lawyers and people who have done various legal work in the room, and all of us been in this organization, you know, some of the youngest people in this organization are 40. So if most of us in this organization are somewhere between 50 and 70 years old, then we've been in this organization a long time. We are in irregular times. We're not quite post-pandemic. I call it pre-post-pandemic, if you can make up words. But in-person had to be a small group, and virtual had to be able to vote. And I don't know if that's in the bylaws, but if it ain't, it needs to be. Anyway, but long story short, even though it was a very close election, relatively close, Kenneth Henry did when becoming the female co-chair, and a treasurer was elected and a few more board members, and then the meeting closed. So now as the leadership for Encobra National, you have Willard Lett as the national male co-chair, and outgoing, because it doesn't end today necessarily, but outgoing is Queen Mother Mashariki Jiwanza from Indianapolis, who is outgoing and retiring, and being female co-chair elect is Kenneth Henry, who has been doing a lot of the lobbying work to get H.R. 40 out of the House committee, out of the House Judiciary Committee. It still ain't on the floor. It stalled. But she was helpful in getting those Congress people to actually make sure that happened, that it got out of committee. And it has over 200 co-sponsors. So that but one of the questions that I always like to raise is, thank you, congratulations, but I don't want to still be beholden to the Democratic Party. And then that starts going off on whether we are loyal to a political party or loyal to our purpose. And we don't want to make too many compromises in order
to accomplish our purpose, that we don't want to back the Democrats when we got stabbed in the back on voting rights earlier this year. We got Juneteenth,
right.
so we get a day off. No money for that. You get a day off. But as far as our voting rights, we get a day off in exchange for the right to vote. Now abortion is going to be criminalized in many states. We know that's going to be a means of incarcerating, penalty, and for life sentences, black women. That is a genocide and re-enslavement ploy going back in time to 1864, when going back in time to slavery. Coming soon to an America near you. So I like to tell people that we're not just looking at reparations, or at least as an individual and a female co-chair of the Detroit chapter and even a congressional candidate for Michigan, through the Green Party, I don't just look at the whole idea of reparation. We're looking at no more re-enslavement, no re-enslavement, and no genocide. All of this has to stop. It's not just what you owe us for the past, it's what we're going to make sure never happens again. Just like the Jews say about the Holocaust, never again. We don't want
right.
to take for granted people won't go back in time. So we need to go back in time as well. And I say go all the way back to before Alexander invaded Egypt. That's the time I'm saying.
Right.
We're not going back 400 years. We're not going back 600 years. We're not going back 800 years. We're going all the way back 2,300 years. And let's go back to when we were ruling the world. And we were ruling the world, and we called the shot, and that was when we know there was no God or man that cursed us with perpetual servitude. No, we're going back to that truth. That's when we were free, and we want to remember that. It is our genetic memory, but we want to resurrect that because we know time is circular. We're going back to that time. We're not going back to slavery. We're going back to freedom. And with that, I'll yield.
All right. Well, that was excellent, wonderful. We thank you much. And again, it's about information, being responsible, making certain that we can provide ample information for our people readily and consistently, you know, and that's what we do here at New Day. Sister Anita, I want to thank you so much. I know it's late for you. We really, really appreciate that report. And again, I appreciate you to be informed, because obviously a lot of folks did not, you know, participate or didn't have access to what was going on. And so, you know, it's good to hear and get some insight into some of that. By the way, tonight's program is a tribute to Brother Ken Bridges, or a salute to Brother Ken Bridges. Yesterday was his Earth Day. And so,
okay.
You know, there's certain people, yeah, so I just wanted to put that out there, you know, in connection to the reparations, conference for this weekend. Yesterday was, in fact, and he talked about internal reparations.
Yes.
That was his thing. Yep.
And another word for that can be reconciliation. And yet we still have to learn how to persuade and not force each other. We still have to learn those tools. But they started off with tools on at least relaxation, breathing, and talking about the psychology of healing your individual self. So starting with the self. And yet what I also said is we're talking about that, and that is good. I enjoyed that. It was good. Yet there is the elephant in the room. So I was almost a psychologist, and then I went to law school, and the elephant in the room was, what the hell just happened? And learning how to exhale doesn't tell me, doesn't answer that question. But learning how to exhale also helps you deal with it and say, we are correcting ourselves, I hope. We are establishing our integrity, I hope. We are maintaining our integrity, I hope. And if we're not, I'll report back and give you another report. But there are those of us who don't have PhDs, law degrees, or big jobs, been able to give $500 lifetime donation to. There's those of us who ain't like that, but we've been here. We've been here before MSNBC. We were here
right.
30 years ago. We were here 20 years ago. We can go back in time all the way back to, you know, how Pam Africa was talking about. We can go back because we've been in the trenches. I'm not a general, but I've definitely been on the streets, right? And as far as the streets are concerned, you might be a general. But in regard to that, some people are worried about us trying to continue, in COBRA, trying to continue attracting those types of grants by professionalizing the board, and that starts to minimalize people who might, maybe you were a postal carrier, but you've been working on reparations for the last 30 years. You know more than some Johnny come lately that just decided to get involved with reparations when it became a hot topic. So these people came along just last year or the last year or two. They hadn't even read a book like Randall Robinson. They read the book. They don't know nothing about that stuff, but they call themselves an expert because they were elected political officer. So they're elected political office, and so that makes them an expert on everything.
Wow.
At least if you're black, it's assumed you're an expert on reparations. But just because you are a PhD, and you probably did read Randall Robinson's books, and you may have a very good academic understanding of reparations.
Right.
If you put all of those people on the board, and now the board is getting paid, then these are the W.E.B. Du Bois talented 10th getting a 10% more when the ones of us who've been in the trenches and blackballed ain't got that kind of money. We kind of could use that financial support, but we ain't getting it. But that's another topic for another time.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's all connecting, Virginia. Everything that you said from beginning to up to this point, it's all connected, and that's what I like. You know, we have a holistic approach. You and others, you know, have that capability to do what I say called connect the black dots, you see.
Yes.
So, you know, so there's a lot of different variables. We know that. But that's what makes up the picture. When
yes.
If you're into a certain mindset, you understand that all of these little segments and components make up the bigger picture. So
say one last thing on that. One last thing on that, Empress, and then I will end. In what Mumia is fighting, in what Trump is doing. Oh, Trump is the biggest example. I have this discussion with the Black Masons all the time. What you are calling the Boule, I expand to also just the whole Masonic order, which includes a lot of the fraternities and sororities as well. And I understand that part of what we're going through when Pam Africa was asking questions, and you were asking questions of why this, why that, why that. If the Black Masons had decided, along with Martin and everybody else, that Martin was afraid when he said he was dying, Martin Luther King, that he was afraid he had integrated his people into a burning house. And so he did. Where are our hospitals? Burnt. Where are our grocery stores? Integrated into the burning house. Where are our farms? Not enough to feed all of us, if we had to depend on black farmers to feed all of us, that doesn't even happen. Can't happen. Mm-hmm. So we're integrated into this burning house thanks to the Masons. However, and also because of this Masonic mm-hmm. order and these brothers that are white, like the Fraternal Order of Police, if you see a conspiracy, as Pam has outlined, where where they take an oath to protect each other, and the blacks are protecting the whites, you get bizarre situations where you got black people protecting the Ku Klux Klan.
Right.
Because they don't want to reveal their secrets, because the Klan will then reveal theirs. So that's the bizarre thing that's going on, but what is starting to correct itself is that these secrets that they're keeping, that means you get away with murder and you get away with treason, as Trump has. Literally, you can incite a civil war and invade the Capitol and kill a police officer and get away with murder because of this Masonic oath. You got some black people saying that's dangerous. Some black Masons are seeing that's dangerous, and that's the metamorphosis that's going on, and our people are self-correcting. We begin the correction, and then it will go to them one way or the other, because what Masons do, if they decide they're not going to keep your secret, they draw their swords, and blacks have been afraid to draw their swords because that's what causes a war. That's what causes a war, and you don't start a fight unless you know you can beat the person you're fighting. So you can understand how sometimes they were keeping secrets because they were calculated, we can't fight them.
But that
too is changing. All of that is changing, and that's a report for another time, because I look at 12:15 and say it's time for dinner. So.
All right,
dinner and then go to bed.
Thank you again. And one kind of sidebar to what you just said. Last week we paid tribute to Ancestor Steve Coakley, and of course he was the one that really helped to give us a lot more insight into this thing that we call the Boule. What myself and a few others are doing is really, we're looking even more. And what I mean by that is it is all-inclusive. When you dig into it and look at it, it does include all of the so-called Greek fraternities, sororities, et cetera, et cetera. So, and again, not all of them even know what some of the other stuff is. See, this is the thing that we have to point out. Because, when I'm saying certain things, I'm not saying that this is what they're all doing. No. It's like anything else. People get into stuff, and sometimes they will never know, because that's why you have these different levels of understanding, comprehension, and involvement. And you even have that in organizations. So you got that in those kind of orders, in those kind of structures, right? So we're going to start breaking some of that down, because one of the ways to defeat and to make what I call have a lesser sting of the effect, the negative effect, because you have some who, talk about, the great work that they have done. And I'm like, we can say that about a lot of things, but we cannot dismiss the destruction either, right?
Right.
So again, like you said, that's a conversation for another time, but we're in a time now where, and you'll understand this phrase that I'm going to say, and some others that are listening as well, we are approaching what I call the Maotic Epoch.
Yeah.
And what that means and does is a lot of that BS that we've been subjected to amongst us, amongst our own people, boy, they're getting ready to get a good spanking,
And that's putting it mildly.
Mildly.
That is exactly That is exactly what we're talking about, that if a Masonic grand healing can let you get away with murder, that yep. there is still a way you pay because of Ma'at. So
right.
the men can
That's
decide.
Right. That's right.
The men
Woo!
Can decide.
Yes.
We're gonna all close our eyes and subvert justice so that you might not get it through the court, but something else happens, like a tornado comes through, or a flood comes through, or a heat wave comes through, or an asteroid comes through, or a solar flare comes through. Ma'at still comes through.
That's right.
Ma'at
absolutely.
Still comes through. And
you know, and again,
justice is Ma'at.
Absolutely.
Ma'at
and again,
justice.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, and just another point of clarity on that, so that people know, we're not talking about the physical or the some people see Ma'at as a goddess or what. We're talking, at least for me, I'm talking about the principles. See, truth, yeah. justice, reciprocity, balance, honor, order, law, and we ain't talking about that kind of stuff that's man-made. See?
Right.
We
right.
talking about that. There has to
right.
be other weapons now in this game.
Absolutely.
See? And that's what we're talking about. If things are going to change,
stuff.
How are they going to change? How are they going to change? Oh, we're going to change because we're going to march, or we're going to have a, and don't get me wrong, I'm about marching, y'all, so don't get me wrong, because it's an experience, it's a way for folks to grow and learn, so be real clear, I'm not putting anything against that. But what I am saying is that it has to be other modes of operations. It has to be all-inclusive. And the problem has been people who know certain things, for whatever reason, have not applied it, utilized it, or whatever you want to call it. You see?
We are breaking
I don't know if
their chains.
Yep.
No, they're
yep.
in chains. They're in chains. Those grandmasters are really grand slaves, but we're breaking their chains. And part of how you break their chain is take them back in time to the foundation of Freemasonry, which began in Egypt. When these black masons realized you are the ones that built the temple and temples. We're not talking about Solomon or don't get me started on that. But that whole story about Hiram Abiff, that was a
right.
sign. When you understand that, then you are free from that curse of Noah, because that curse of Noah also, we're talking about Noah was Osir. Now, if he was Osir, who did he curse? Don't let me start revealing that secret. I'm going to get off this phone, but because nobody wants to talk about that. But who did he curse? And why did he curse him? Because if Noah is just a man and not a god, how can he curse you for the rest of eternity?
Well, you know, because that was my initial background training. I started as an undergrad in religion, in the proper religion. So for me, I look at that stuff in the context now as being, folklore, myths, and other things, which still has its place.
Yes,
if one wants to embrace it and internalize it as if it actually happened, I mean, that's their prerogative to do so. But I've read various things only for ultimately for the reason of learning how to use logic, rationale, and other reasonings. You see,
and that's where you understand what I just said. If
right,
you understood what I just said. Some people don't, because every word in the Bible is infallible and correct, but. And for those people who believe that, willing to die for it, okay, the question that I ask, I call him Osir, but Noah. Noah cursed his son with perpetual slavery because his son uncovered his nakedness. This is how I said, this is how I know it was Osir. What does uncover his nakedness mean? He just walked in the tent and saw his father drunk and naked? No, we're talking about something deeper than that. Because you don't curse somebody forever just for seeing you drunk and naked. You curse somebody forever because you did something to his nakedness called castration. Now, I don't know. I am in Judaism. So, and this is a story from the Torah. But the Torah is borrowed from the Egyptians just like everything else. Torah means ma'at. So, oh, don't get me started. But if, when you understand that fusion, what I call that Hebrew fusion, then you understand Noah was Osar. He was castrated. He didn't curse a son. He cursed a brother. And who was the brother that castrated him? So, and if the curse was perpetual slavery, now you have to understand we're not the brother. We're the Haru. When people understand we're not Seth. We're the Haru. And if you know who you are, then you also understand you're not a slave. If you know you're the Haru, you're not a slave. You weren't a slave. You are actually the crown prince. To go from being a slave to a crown prince, especially if you are in Prince Hall, this is what I'm talking about. We're going through a metamorphosis right now where those Prince Hall maidens are starting to understand why they are called princes. They're starting to understand. That's a whole new thing. But as they're going through their metamorphosis, then we're going to also see changes. But what's causing their metamorphosis are us women causing their resurrection. We are offset.
You know what's so... Let me tell you what's so ironic about that. This year's theme for the Million Woman March 25 is the divine resurrection.
Yes.
That's the theme for this year.
Resurrection. That's what's going on. Scariest thing in the whole world. Wouldn't it be scary if those men get their paws back? Wow.
Well, it's going to happen because,
it is,
you know,
happening.
Fortunately... Yeah, it's inevitable, and fortunately, I know for me, I have met, you know, black men who get it. I mean, they get it, and
yes.
They have a real love and appreciation for black women. They're not afraid of them. They're not, you know, so caught up in this patriarchal, white, Eurocentric concept of thing. And note, see, now, having traveled this path, I know of males who talk about how much they love black women and all this old stuff, but will be very selective, meaning the ones that they will support, they ain't on no front line. I can tell you that, okay?
Oh, no.
They ain't doing
front line. Yeah. No. The other part of that is they want to see, some men are looking to control. But as you become the goddess, so you become one with God or goddess, whoever is your alpha. And since I'm a female, I call Aset my alpha. You become one with that one. And as you become one with that one, the man who understands you is going to be your counterpart, because not many men are going to. If he is not the Osar or the Alpha, if he is not the one, then he's going to try and control you. But that's like a Beta controlling Alpha, Omicron controlling Alpha, Pi controlling Alpha. Y'all, the rest of the alphabet, you try to be first when you actually second or fifth or 19th or something like that. You can't be the one. If you are the one, then you're not afraid of another one. Because the two of you can become one, and then now there's three. The one can be one with the one.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have to do a whole other program on something like this because that time has come also. But, family, listen, we have run out of time. We've been talking with our sister Anita Bell in Detroit. Anita, I'm going to call you later on this week because I have a concern about one of our brothers in Detroit and I need to ask you about, you know, but I'll do that offline, okay?
Okay.
All right, my sister, I thank you so much. Much love and respect. I love serious Black women that are out here doing this work on a day-to-day basis and I'm really doing it. Really doing it, y'all. Okay? So, Sister Anita, thank you again. And we'll be in touch later on this week.
Okay,
absolutely. Good thing.
All right.
Peace to you.
Talk to you later this week. Okay, then. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, always.
All right. Best wishes to all your listeners. Bye-bye.
Yes. Peace to you.
All right, family, listen, we're going to get ready to close out. And before we do, I did mention I want to go back to Baba Yaga real quick. And we're going to revisit this topic as to why Black folks in most major cities that say they woke and conscious and whatever, cultural and whatever, give little to no support for the maintenance or the development or the building of independent Black schools or some other form of educational institutions that is running on a day-to-day basis. Why? So I'm going to go back to Baba Yaga real quick. We're going to close out again this week's tribute or salute. And tomorrow, family, we're going to kick off our first community ancestral program. It'll be monthly, not something that we do, you know, whenever somebody dies. No. Anyway, we'll talk more about that later. But I want to go back to Baba Yaga. Again, one of our brothers in support. Yeah, we do have real brothers, y'all, that we call brothers in support. They're doing the work for real. Again, we're going to kind of make this real clear about what we're talking about and why. But Baba Yaga, you still there? Okay. Might have lost him. All right, no problem. This is family. Tomorrow we'll be at Malcolm X Park. We'll be there starting at 1:30. Sisters, we're now starting our Sister Soul sessions. Every month, we will be at one of the parks or something here in Philly doing a workout, getting information about health, starting tomorrow, 1:30, Malcolm X Park. Those sisters who have a few extra pounds that you're trying to, you know, get rid of, there's no problem. We have some very light kinds of movements that helps to get you acclimated to some things. So, again, tomorrow, if you want more information, you can email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, we're going to start introducing more herb information, aromatherapy, and other things. Starting tomorrow, we call them the Soul Sister, as in Solstice, soul, as in soleil, as in sun, as in, y'all get it, all right? Anyway, that starts tomorrow. This is some of the new components of MWM that we are introducing so that we can show some consistency. Well, more consistency, let's put it that way. This program is now in its 13th year. Starting next month, we'll be featuring some new segments. Our brother Charles is going to be joining us with Connecting the Black Dots. He's going to be having a monthly segment. He's been on our program before. Wonderful, wonderful information. You're talking about research? Oh, Sister Keisha going to love him. Research is crazy. But we'll tell you more about that next week. Again, this weekend, tomorrow, we'll pay tribute to, again, Steve Coakley, Dr. Bamba Ross, Kathleen Dunham, and, of course, Kwame Ture. Love you all much. Check this out.
And this brother, and he's still blazing a trail, even to death. So he has an eternal flame. His flame don't burn out. Some of y'all flames burn out. His flame is still strong. Let us all get on our feet, please. And let's give a warm round of applause to a great hero all the way from Guinea, all the way from the mother country, our brother, our friend, Brother Kwame Ture. Brother Kwame Ture.
Thank you. Thank you. We want to thank you for your warm welcome. You must excuse us for sitting, but we have some pain in our legs. And we're trying as much as possible to stay off of it while we're doing some tests with the doctors. Of course, the All African People's Revolutionary Party is always happy to be with the United African Movement. The All African People's Revolutionary Party is always happy to be with the United African Movement. And there are three other members of our Central Committee who are present. Brother Ron Gibbs is here, no? Brother Ron Gibbs is here, yes. Sister Marina Piazza, who's also the head of the All African Women's Revolutionary Union. And of course, we're always proud of our living history. His brother, who was come through many struggles, was the chair of the Black Panther Party in New York during the rough times, and since joined the All African People's Revolutionary Party. I've had the honor of working with him for almost 30 years, a member of our Central Committee. The youngest member, David Brothers. Thank you. Of course, we are always honored to be with the United African Movement because the world is divided into many, many different categories. But one of the categories which interests those of us who are concerned with advancing humanity the most is that between the conscious and the unconscious. This division between the conscious and the unconscious must be properly understood. The people instinctively love freedom, and they will instinctively fight for freedom. But you cannot win freedom on instincts. You can only win freedom on reason. Therefore, the unconscious are those who react on instinct. The conscious are those who react on reason. The job of the conscious is to make the unconscious conscious. Let us take a simple example. I think it was in 1992, after one more brutal beatings too many, the African population in Los Angeles, California, revolted. Rose up in righteous rebellion. This was instinctively revolutionary. Instinctively in the sense that it wasn't planned. Instinctive in the sense that it was this reaction to brutality. And this instinctive revolutionary act was very costly to American capitalism. It even had to bring in the American army. Very costly. But since it was on instinct, it had no reason, nothing to direct it, it would spin itself out. Those who participated were largely unconscious. We must come to understand that the overwhelming majority of our people are unconscious. But just because they're unconscious, you shouldn't think they don't want freedom. As a matter of fact, sometimes the unconscious is quicker willing to give their lives in struggle than the conscious. These are simple facts. Would you imagine what it would be like when we are conscious rebellions, when we consciously organize to rebel in Los Angeles with reason? I mean, making supply lines, making sure armaments are there, having hospital aids, having fire brigades, just like they do even in Ireland, nothing big, just a little planning.
That's right.
Just a little planning.
That's right.
This is what we want to speak to you about this evening. Making the unconscious conscious.
And onward we go.
talk to y'all next week. And needless to say, more to come. Peace to you all.